The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Welcome into the Brad Sesmat Show alongside Haley Stasiak. I'm Jordan Hamm, filling in for the big guy here on Wednesday. Got a lot to get to for you. Brad will be talking to Peter King as well as Michael Fabiano and, of course, talk to the Lopes. So a lot going on here on this Wednesday. Of course, a lot of football as we gear up for week two for the NFL, week three in some cases in college football, but certainly a lot to get to as well as the Diamondbacks. And Haley, that's where I think we should start the rundown brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. Diamondbacks able to snap their losing streak and get a win, and it looks like the newly shaped bullpen, we saw some strengths come out of that.
It definitely worked on Tuesday night. Yoshi Hirano came in, got his first career save here in the States. Just a really solid outing from him, and then also Brad Ziegler came on, did his job, and Zach Greinke had a really solid start there. So it started with Greinke. This bullpen, the way it's being restructured, came in and it clicked just the way that it seemed Torey Lovello was kind of hoping it would. Obviously, Brad Boxberger out as the closer there. That was announced on Monday. You bounce back from a 13-2 loss, and you come out and you do what you did. The kind of the talk around this team has been, we control our destiny. We control this on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Right. They had no control. So to see them come back out, Ketel Marte had a good game. He's kind of been in and out of the starting lineup there too. Just to come out and get the win and kind of right the ship a little bit here, it's good.
This is what good baseball teams have, is they have a stopper in the rotation. When the team is bleeding, they know if it's that fifth, fourth day, whatever it is, they have a guy that can come in and stop the bleeding. And I feel like Zach Greinke's done a pretty nice job of that this year so far.
I agree. And there's been some times where he hasn't been that stopper.
Right.
There have been instances where he hasn't been able to come on and do that. But to do that in this case on, what day is it, September 12th, and or I guess yesterday, September 11th, to get that, stop it there and move on with this Rockies series, they need to win these next two games for sure.
And I think with the bullpen, I think this is kind of freeing for everybody involved, for the players, for Torey Lovello, because a lot of times he would play the matchups, he'd play the analytics. We know he's a very thoughtful person.
Right. And he was really trying to stick to the structure.
But I feel like kind of the way the bullpen was starting to go and the struggles were starting to go, it was almost at times they were kind of boxed in to those roles. And they'd break out of it here and there, but now it's whoever's the hot hand is going to pitch the big innings.
Which is the way it should be at this time of year.
And right now, that's Yoshi Hirano. That's Brad Ziegler. We saw what they did. Ziegler, an inning and a third, just gave up one hit, got out of a jam. Andrew Chafin struggled, walked.
Jake Diekman struggled a little bit.
Yeah, walked a couple guys. Ziegler was able to clean that up. Jake Diekman struggled, faced two batters, two lefties. There was the double off the wall, and then the bunt single, which was a beautiful bunt. But, you know, first and third, no longer playing the matchups here. They went to the hot hand, Yoshi Hirano, and he just threw BBs and got out of it with the win there. So I think moving forward, this was just a really wise move, was let's, you know, get Brad Boxberger figured out. Let's get Archie Bradley figured out. You have two guys that are really working really, really well right now. Let's go ahead and utilize them with those big outs. And listen, the Rockies, you know, they have a murderer's row in their lineup. The middle of that lineup is going to be really tough. So Lovello's going to have to figure out, you know, usually he's using the Zieglers, the Hiranos in the sixth, seventh inning. If they're being saved potentially for the late innings, they got to figure out how to bridge that gap a little bit. I think the starters have done a nice job going deeper into the ball games lately, especially from the Robbie Rays, who we've seen, you know, kind of string together a couple of not only really good starts, but starts where he goes deep into the ball game. You know, Zach Godley, we've seen a couple of those as well. So I think that could be, you know, just definitely something to look out for. And you mentioned him real quickly, Ketel Marte. On Thursday, Torey Lovello talked to him that Daniel Descalzo was kind of going to be the guy at second base. He responds really nicely, four RBIs. And remember last year, he was the one that came on really strong and kind of took that shortstop position back when he kind of came back from injury, and you know he had some time away from the team, but when he came back he was really a hot bat for them, a great glove, and he had a huge impact in that wild card game. So that's another guy who, you know, it just seems like September might be a good month for him. Mm-hmm. So that could be good for Diamondback fans. Today, Patrick Corbin is pitching. In his last six starts, 1.88 ERA, 3-1 in that span, and batters are hitting just 188. So another hot hand that they're able to go with here. The last time he pitched at Coors, didn't go deep into the ballgame, threw 108 pitches. Just 4 1/3, gave up 2 earned runs. They were still able to get that win. But this was another one where he came in really hot and the Rockies were able to work that pitch count. So something to look out for tonight.
And just taking a look here at the broad picture of the NL West, Diamondbacks win these two games. They're not necessarily going to catch up all the way to the Rockies. But if you listen to our Diamonds in the Desert podcast this week, we talked a little bit more in depth about how the NL West may shake out in this last couple weeks. And we mentioned the Dodgers taking on the Reds and how this should be an easy series for them. The Dodgers have lost two in a row to the Reds. So,
and the Diamondbacks struggled against the Reds.
Yes,
as well.
September baseball, you never know what's going to happen. And the Cincinnati Reds have been one of those teams where you expect to go in and just blow that series out of the water. Mm-hmm. And it's been a struggle for a lot of teams.
They have some sneaky good pitchers. That's what happened with the Diamondbacks. They just ran into a couple of buzzsaws where it was just like they cannot find a way on base. And you get a couple runs across. And they do have some big hitters in the middle of that lineup. Right. And you know, they're able to take a couple of games. So a lot to look out for in the NL West, in all of Major League Baseball, as we are just moving through September. Let's focus now to ASU. Anthony Cooper, a lineman from Millennium, made his commitment to ASU. That's the fifth in-state commit for ASU. And I was just taking a look at the commits that they've gotten and kind of the strategy they've used with them, because this class in Arizona is very good. It's had a lot of really, high profile recruits. None of them had committed to ASU. Mm-hmm. So I think ASU with this new regime kind of changed their strategy a little bit. They wanted to be early on some guys who might be under recruited. When you go through this list, Connor Soley, a linebacker from Saguaro, really good player. ASU was his first Power 5
offer.
His
older brother goes there.
Yep, Kyle Soley is a linebacker over there right now, but Connor's kind of the heart and soul of that Saguaro defense, and we're going to talk a lot about them in the Friday Night 360 AZ preview show coming up after the Brad Sesmat show. Roman DeWise, the Basha offensive lineman, that ASU was his first offer. Andre Johnson, I saw him Friday night. He's a wide receiver at Tolleson. I don't think had much buzz because of playing on the west side, playing at Tolleson. Not really a football power. This guy's the real deal. He had, I believe, 5 touchdowns.
Wow.
And, you know, has the size.
And they were playing Campo Verde.
They were playing Hamilton.
Hamilton.
But another really good 6A power. He has the size that he could kind of build into a pretty big wide receiver in the next couple of years. And then Ricky Pearsall Jr., another really good wide receiver from Corona del Sol. Another, you don't really think football school when you think Corona del Sol, you usually think basketball. But this guy just catches so many passes and is able to make guys miss. And so it's just interesting the way, and Al Luganbill kind of talked about this when he took over and kind of sat down with media. They're going off of potential. They're not, they value that maybe higher than more colleges than the guys that can help them right now. Mm-hmm. So I think they still feel they're a little bit behind in the 2019 class. I think they're certainly getting caught up, but this strategy of adding Cooper, another guy who is that ASU was his first Power 5 offer, every kind of breakdown you see of these guys is like 3 years from now, these could be really good players. So interesting to look at. And then you look at where else they're in. Jalen Williams, a really good player over at Shadow Mountain, they're in his final six. Javen Wright, the safety over at Hamilton, they're in their top four. Noah Pola-Gates, a national recruit, they're in his top 10. So I think by picking up a little bit of steam with the under-recruited guys, they're now trying to go for some of the bigger fish.
Interesting strategy.
So that's on the recruiting front. Also wanted to touch base on ASU. I saw a really good stat From Kent Summers, he tweeted this. Jeremy Hawks from ASU Media Relations supplied this. So ASU has scored on 62 consecutive possessions in the red zone, including 40 touchdowns. That's 79% of the time. Manny Wilkins in that time, 42 for 62. That's 67.7% completion percentage. 342 yards, 19 touchdowns, zero interceptions.
Pretty impressive.
So when you look at this team, you know, I know that there were some fans that were frustrated kind of with the offense against Michigan State. They felt like Manny might have overthrown a couple receivers.
There was definitely a lot of that.
And he did. But when you look at that, I think if he's going to miss, he's going to miss long. He's going to make a pass that only the wide receiver can get. He was just a couple steps past that. And when you have a kicker like Brandon Ruiz, who's very consistent, and, you know, we saw he kicked a very long field goal earlier in the game and then kicked the game winner, just don't get in your own way.
Right.
Take the points. And the way that this defense has, I think, frankly, overachieved so far, but they've surprised a lot of people.
They've come a long way, for sure.
I think that the defense, if you pair that with a quarterback who doesn't make mistakes specifically in those high-leverage situations, I think that's definitely a plan for success and something I think that's overlooked a lot.
I agree, and I think the most impressive thing with that ASU win last Saturday against Michigan State was their ability to read the situations and play the game to get the points.
Yeah.
I know Herm Edwards' key phrase is play to win the game.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, it was playing to win the game. They did what they needed to do to hold Michigan State where they wanted them and get the win.
Yeah, so they take on San Diego State, their first road game. A lot of storylines that you'll see on Sports 360 AZ. Brad Sesmat just did a really good piece on Herm Edwards and his ties to San Diego State. There's some pretty great photos of Herm Edwards back in the day on
those
that story. So go ahead and check that out.
Really
quickly before we head off to break, rookie Josh Allen of the Buffalo Bills. The Bills had a rough weekend last weekend. They lost 47-3 to the Ravens. Josh Allen will be the starter. And the connection I want to make here is Cardinals didn't have a great week one. When could Josh Rosen see that similar fate to Josh Allen? Haley, I know you have some thoughts on this.
I don't think anytime soon, personally. I think the tone all spring, all summer was Sam Bradford's the guy. And week one, I mean, we talked about this a little bit with college football. It's an adjustment week, as much as you don't want it to be an adjustment week. But you got to get this firing in all cylinders. I don't think it's going to be anytime soon that Josh Rosen comes in. And I don't think it's needed. I think Sam Bradford can do his job and get things done and put the Cardinals where they need to be.
It was a very rough week one for Sam Bradford, for the entire offense. David Johnson really struggled. The offensive line really struggled. When you give up 21 points to the Washington Redskins in the second quarter, you can't really go to David Johnson much in the run game. So a lot of times I think the Redskins were just sitting back waiting on pass plays. The difference here, you have Sam Bradford, a proven veteran quarterback when he's healthy. For the Bills, you have Nate Peterman. Nathan Peterman was a nice college quarterback. We saw what happened with the Bills week one. So I think they have a lot less to work with also on the defensive side than the Cardinals do. So I tend to agree with you. I think Sam Bradford will have a much longer leash than Peterman. I think that's a very obvious
statement. And I think
the
point you make, obviously,
but
tends to that.
Yeah, and like you said, it's been the tone going throughout. There's a process here. You know, not to get all 76ers on you, but you got to trust the process a little bit. You got to give Rosen time to develop, even though everything we've heard is he's picking this up really quickly. But it's just, I think every time Sam Bradford has an incomplete pass, there's going to be some fans that say, hey, when's Rosen coming in? So definitely an interesting storyline here for the Cardinals moving forward. Coming up next, Brad Sesmat with Peter King talking all things NFL. That's coming up next on the Brad Sesmat Show.
And now let's turn our attention to all things around the National Football League, NBC Sports, Football Morning in America. It is must read, the FMIA. Peter King is with us as we get ready for week two of the NFL season. Peter joins us via Skype. It is good to see you, and it is also overreaction week because one game in, cities are ready to pull the plug and pay attention to the NBA and the NHL and anything else going on. And in other cities, it's we're going to the Super Bowl. So let's start there, Peter. The cities that after 1 week, it's, you know what, guys, this is pretty much how it's going to go. And there's a lot of reason for concern. Who's at the top of your list?
Well, the Buffalo Bills, without any question. I think they're going to be a disaster. Their quarterback play was awful the other day, and I can't understand why they put the same guy out there again, Nathan Peterman. I think that, and I'm not kidding either, I think they ought to be in the Colin Kaepernick business. Mm-hmm. If you've got a weak offensive line, you need to get a quarterback who can move around and who can make plays with his feet and his arm. And you don't want to play Josh Allen right now, I'd bring Colin Kaepernick in. Second team I'd be extremely concerned with is the Detroit Lions. That was an all-around meltdown last night. And, you know, Matthew Stafford, you know, the Jets after the game said we knew exactly what they were doing. I don't know how you can spend an entire offseason if you're the Detroit Lions and put out something as predictable as that in the first game. But they just weren't bad on defense or on offense. They were bad on defense, and they were horrendous on special teams. Matt Patricia has got a dumpster fire on his hand after just four quarters. And I'd be concerned with the Cardinals.
Yeah.
You know, you go down 24-0. Nothing is working. You know, David Johnson gets 14 touches. I don't see a lot of great reason for optimism. They couldn't get anything done with their $20 million quarterback. I'd be a little worried if I were Steve Wilks, and I would think that, you know, we're going to have to win games in the teens because I doubt we're going to be scoring much in the high 20s this year.
What's interesting on the Cardinals' end is 22 first downs allowed in the first half to the Redskins, who, in my humble opinion, aren't going to be the leaders in total offense by the end of the season. And the next 2 weeks, it's Aaron Donald and the Rams, and then Khalil Mack and the Bears. Sam Bradford did take some hits. David didn't touch the ball much, as you alluded to. I was just surprised, Peter, out here, how little fight they put up. And it looked like bad football in early August. There were penalties and missteps and wrong personnel. There's just a lot wrong. And I felt like that stuff should be cleaned up by now, at least out here.
You know, I guess a lot of that happens, in my opinion, by momentum and by how you're playing. And the one stat I saw Monday morning when I was looking over all the box scores is, you know, at halftime, first downs, it was 22-2. And so if it's like desperation time, mm-hmm. You know, you saw it with the Lions last night. You know, the Lions look like 10 minutes into the third quarter, you know, the last third of the game, they just totally checked out. What would really kind of bother me is that, you know, you should have some weapons in the passing game. You know, 11 passing yards in the first half. It's really, I don't want to be too harsh, but that's absolutely, totally inexcusable. And that's something that the Cardinals had better hope that that's a mulligan, because if that's a sign of things to come, they'll start having some non-sellouts, you know, at the stadium that has had nothing but sellouts.
There's fans that want Dez Bryant to come here to put alongside of Larry Fitzgerald because they don't see anybody else. Where are you at on Dez Bryant, Peter?
He's going to end up somewhere. I don't think it's a bad decision if that's what if they feel like their young receivers right now can't handle it yet. You know, if it's still too early for Kirk, for instance. I don't have real strong opinions. He mm-hmm. Just check out his last 2 years, though. He didn't play very well in Dallas. He was not a big impact player. But, you know, if you need a body who's done it, who's been there before, who basically would come in and be, you know, the modern day Cuba Gooding Jr., because that's what he would be. He would be a strident, emotional guy. Then bring him in. He's going to get signed somewhere.
Peter King with us. Football Morning in America, NBC Sports, must read. Log on, check it out. Football Morning in America. Before I get you out of here, look ahead to week two. Pick a game or two off the board that are intriguing to you. I'll just throw Philadelphia at Tampa Bay from the standpoint of Ryan Fitzpatrick continues down the path for another week. When Jameis Winston comes back, is it a done deal that he's back on the bench and Jameis is the starter? That's just me. You may have other games. What do you look at here in week two?
I mean, New England-Jacksonville is going to be fascinating because just as Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator of the Patriots in week one, had to find a way to throw the ball fast, consistently fast all game, because that's exactly what he did playing against Houston with Merciless and Clowney and Watt. He's going to do the exact same thing this week, against the Jaguars, and he has to do that. The other game I like for a lot of weird reasons is Cleveland and New Orleans.
Hmm.
I mean, Sean Payton is going to make this an incredibly unpleasant, uncomfortable week, just like his mentor Bill Parcells would do after you think you have a good defense and they allow 48 in the first game of the season. So that's going to be interesting. Plus, the Browns are sort of fascinating. Look at their defense. They've got impact players on that defense, and they don't give up. In the past, they're down 21-7 to the big bad Steelers, who's like their abusive big bullying brother, from 2 hours away in Pittsburgh. And they came back and they tied them 21-all. And the players were ticked off afterwards because they felt like we should have won this game. So I think that is a really, really interesting game coming up, too.
Last question. On the Rams and Cardinals, on the surface, and you touched on Arizona a little bit earlier, thumbnail what you see out of the Rams 1 week in, are they one of the top teams in the NFL with everything that they've assembled there defensively? Look at this Sunday's game, Cardinals-Rams.
Well, I picked the Rams to get to the Super Bowl this year. And one of the reasons I liked them a lot is because I think that the only sort of significant weakness they have, I think, is at edge rusher. In fact, it came out this weekend that they tried to get Khalil Mack and they probably would have cut him after 1 year just because they were all in for this year. But I think the one thing to look at from an offensive standpoint is that they basically get rid of Tavon Austin and Sammy Watkins, and they add Brandon Cooks, who basically is the combo platter of those two guys. You can run him on a jet sweep. You can also run him on deep routes. He got two pass interference calls last night in that game. So even though he's down for 87 yards, he should be down for 150. But I do think he's the complete receiver that Sean McVay has really wanted. So just what Cardinal fans want to see, a more complete offensive team than the Rams had a year ago when they were the number one offense in football.
Peter, as always, appreciate the time and visit. Have a great week. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Brad. You have a good one.
There's Peter King with us, joining us via Skype from New York City. Football Morning in America with NBC Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. Now time to turn our attention to all things fantasy football, as we do every week with Michael Fabiano from the NFL Network, NFL.com, the Hall of Famer. It is overreaction week one, meaning guys are blowing up their teams. They're making panic moves. They're dropping guys right and left. In the second quarter the other night, they may have dropped Aaron Rodgers and added DeShone Kizer. I don't know, Michael, but you have to talk people off the ledge usually after week number one. So go for it. Who should they just stick it out with and don't get that concerned with?
There are a few of them. The one name that was probably the most prominent on my Twitter timeline was DeShone Watson, who gave you 11 points. And remember last year, he averaged over 27 in his six starts. But people need to realize that was never going to happen again. He is a potential top five fantasy quarterback, but every game is not going to be a winner. It never is for any quarterback, no matter who it is. Even a guy like Aaron Rodgers will have a down week. So DeShone Watson, just start him. Don't be concerned about week one. Same kind of thing with Kareem Hunt. Now, Hunt was a guy that I don't have any shares in, and it's not because I didn't think he could be a very productive fantasy back, but I sort of expect some regression with him, and we saw that in week one. Mm-hmm. With that being said, this game against the Steelers could be a really high-scoring affair, so you're going to continue to ride him. He still was the leader in snaps and touches in that backfield, although Spencer Ware got a few carries and looked pretty good. So at this point, you're sticking with your studs.
The waiver wire coming into week two, there's some names that are already surfacing here at this point of the week that are interesting names to keep an eye on from your point of view.
Chris Godwin, who actually talked about him on the show in the preseason, I really like him. And with Deshaun Jackson now questionable because of a concussion, you're looking at Godwin as a potential starter this week, although it's a bad matchup against the Eagles. You have to look at his opportunities and the fact that he was second in snaps played among wide receivers in Tampa, behind only Mike Evans. George Kittle is a big-time pickup. This guy is going to be owned in all leagues after this waiver wire pickup procedure, because you've got Delanie Walker out for the season. You've got Greg Olsen, who's month-to-month at this point. The tight end position is thin. Mm-hmm. It's very thin. And Kittle led all Niners receivers and targets and had a very good game. Could have had an even better game had he not dropped a pass there from Jimmy Garoppolo. Some of the other names that you're going to be looking to pick up, Austin Eckler, who despite a low snap total, he only saw 29% of the snaps. He still went off, very talented guy, and has some standalone value as a flex starter. Ted Ginn in New Orleans is someone who you can target. Philip Lindsay. Now, I'm going to caveat this because I still love Royce Freeman. I still think he's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. But Lindsay saw 25 snaps in this game, and he was productive. He needs to be owned in all leagues in case a backfield committee does truly emerge in Denver. Tyrod Taylor or Tyrod Taylor. It's going to take me a long time to call him Tyrod. It is. I keep saying Tyrod. It's been years of Tyrod, so yeah. Now I'm like, it's Tyrod, it's Tyrod. 24 points last week against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now he's got a matchup coming up against the Saints. Could be a high-scoring game if you need a quarterback. He's an option. Geronimo Allison in Green Bay. Anytime your quarterback is Aaron Rodgers, there is a chance that you'll put up a big stat line in any given week. And Allison did that this past week, even against a good Bears defense. Tyler Lockett's also someone to keep an eye on. Seattle could be without Doug Baldwin for a few weeks because of the knee issues. Philip Dorsett. I don't know if it's Dorsett or Dorsett.
Dorsett.
For me,
go with both, too.
It's Tony Dorsett, which means it's Philip Dorsett, which means I'll go Dorsett.
Yeah.
He actually led the Patriots wide receivers in targets and fantasy points. Chris Hogan was a big bomb this past week, and he now needs to be added. Quincy Enunwa is another player that had a very good week one for the New York Jets. What a game that was, huh? Oh, my goodness gracious. If you had Matthew Stafford like I did, you were not happy. And one more, Kenny Galladay in that game. Baby Megatron, maybe. We'll see what happens. But he looked very good, and he was a deep sleeper going into the season. And he looked pretty solid in that Monday night affair. He needs to be added as well.
The Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano, just throwing it out there after week one, NFL Network, NFL.com. You can follow him on Twitter as well. Let's go over to Green Bay a little bit on a running back spot.
Mm-hmm.
And also Adrian Peterson and what you saw out of him with the Redskins. If you're choosing Redskins, Packers, running backs, Jones, Peterson, where are you at on that one?
Jones is actually another one. Aaron Jones, if you have a roster spot available, or maybe you have a reserve spot where you can put guys who are either suspended or an injured reserve like we do on NFL.com, add him. Because Jamal Williams did not put up good numbers in week one. Tough matchup, though. Now he's got another bad matchup against the Vikings. And if he doesn't produce this week, maybe Aaron Jones snakes that job from him at some point during the course of the regular season. To me, he's the more talented of the two running backs. In Washington, Adrian Peterson, I mean, did we see that coming?
Yeah.
I mean, this guy had almost 30 touches, puts up a monster stat line against his former team, and Chris Thompson also was tremendous coming off of last year's leg injury. I would sell high on Adrian Peterson. At some point, being that he's 33 years old, if he's going to continue to see that many touches in a game, I fear him breaking down, and that's why I would suggest selling high on Adrian Peterson, but Chris Thompson is someone you want to hold on to and start week in and week out. Now, we always like to say Alex Smith likes to dink and dunk. He didn't do it last year, but he also had Tyreek Hill on that roster. There's no Tyreek Hill in Washington, so I think he will be utilizing Chris Thompson very often as a pass catcher. A
couple other questions. We'll let him go. Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer, NFL Network, NFL.com. Make sure you check out his content. Speaking of Chris Thompson, we get one in the mailbag. I need to start one this week. Carlos Hyde, Chris Thompson, Alex Collins.
Chris Thompson is the call. If it's a PPR league, that is a no-brainer for me. Collins' matchup, it's not unfavorable. It's not favorable. Last week was the biggest sort of game script killer that I've ever seen for a running back. He barely played in the second half, and it wasn't because he's not the guy. It's because the Ravens were so brutally beating the Buffalo Bills that they sat a lot of their starters because they have a Thursday night game. So forget about what Collins did or didn't do. He would have had a big game if the game script was different. But this week, out of those three backs, I like Chris Thompson.
Patrick Mahomes or Jimmy Garoppolo this week?
How about Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah.
I like both quarterbacks. I'm going to go with Mahomes because I feel like this is going to be a high-scoring game at the big ketchup bottle there, Heinz Field. And Ben Roethlisberger, who I told everyone to sit last week, people just don't believe me when I say he stinks on the road. They don't. And every time he plays on the road, he stinks. But now he's back at home, so this is going to be a high-scoring game. I would go with Mahomes in this contest.
Last question. Would you trade Bell for Ajayi in Deshaun Watson's standard scoring league?
Deshaun Watson and Ajayi for Bell? See, that's an impossible question to answer. I don't know when Le'Veon Bell's coming back.
Yeah.
I would prefer to have Le'Veon Bell on my roster. If he is going to be back in week 4, I would make that deal. If he's not coming back until week 10, and then he comes back so he can guarantee that he is going to be a free agent in 2019, then I would make this deal. I have no insights into whether or not he's coming back or not coming back. I will tell you this. What James Conner did this past week is going to start people talking about, well, when Le'Veon Bell was suspended and injured a couple of seasons ago, D'Angelo Williams was damn good.
Yes, he was.
And in week 1, when Le'Veon Bell decided he wasn't going to show up to the team, James Conner was damn good. So that's a hard question for me, and that's more of a personal preference. To me, I don't want to trade for a running back who I don't know is going to play even in the next month or two. It's too much of a risk for me.
Let you go off that, Michael. Have a great week. Thanks.
Have a good one. Take care, my friend.
It's Michael Fabiano there with the NFL Network and NFL.com. Great content. Appreciate his time. He joins us every week. Sports360, AZ.com. Time now for Talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk Grand Canyon University athletics, all the sports across the Fruited Plain throughout the season and beyond, even year-round now with GCU. Appreciate the partnership with them. This week, Tim Nolan, who's been traversing the country, you're in Delaware, and now you're going to go to Texas. I mean, you're all over the place here, Coach. How are you with the women's volleyball program?
Oh, we're doing good. We're doing good. Thanks so much for having me on.
Sure.
Yeah, we've been certainly logging the flight miles, no question.
So we'll get into 6-3 record and all of that and on the court, but I'm just curious. So let's start with travel. Is this a stretch that's taking a lot out of your team, do you think? Do you have to pace yourself with this group?
You know, I think we're so young that they don't really know any better. So we're trying to – we made a decision early last year when we knew we were going to be so young this year, that we really wanted to get them out on the road and teach them how to study on the road, how to train, how to mentally prepare for the matches. So we made a conscious decision. I think it's been difficult. The trip to Delaware certainly took its toll on us a little bit. But, you know, we're ready to go, and we're excited to be traveling to Texas this weekend.
I would think your team building would be in good shape from this and getting a group together. Sometimes it's great to get away from home and not have all the comforts, and you find out if a team can come together or not. That's got to be a benefit here, right?
No question. I think all the time spent together, you know, on the bus, in the hotel, the meals, study hall, it makes the team dynamic great. You know, we have a good group of kids. We have 17 student-athletes that all get along. They all understand it's about competing and enjoying their experience and making the most out of it.
So you start conference play, Coach, coming up next week. Where is the team at from your point of view right now as you finish up the non-conference part of your schedule?
You know, honestly, I think we're still developing. We've learned a lot through our non-conference tournaments so far and the three we've already played. We've learned some different dynamics, and we're getting better at our systems, but we still have a long way to go. You know, we're still working on the offensive side of the ball a little bit more. Our defense is a little bit ahead of our offense right now. But it's developing and it's coming, but it's one of those things that takes time. You know, you got to constantly be working on the timing, and it's, you know, we're all tempo stuff. So it's, you know, the outside hitter has to be on the same page as the setter and understand the distance and understand the pass and trust that the setter is going to put the ball in the right spot. And it's a dynamic that is constantly evolving. And we're getting better week to week, but we're nowhere close as good as we need to be at it.
What do you like most about this team, Tim?
You know, I love this team's fight. This team absolutely will not throw in the towel and give up. It doesn't matter if we're going three sets, five sets. This team will constantly battle. They'll constantly represent the school and the student body and, you know, the athletic department at the highest level, and they just constantly fight. You know, we went five against Marist, and going into the fifth set, I looked down the bench and I was a little nervous because, you know, we got didn't play as well the night before and we were having a little rocky start, and I looked down the bench going to the fifth set and the girls were high-fiving and talking to each other and making sure everyone knew the same things, and they knew they could win. They had no question in their mind, and I love that about this group.
Talking with Tim Nolan, talk to the Lopes, volleyball coach, women's side at GCU. We have some video that we've been showing here, and a lot of it is of the Havocs and the student section. And I try not to go down the path of the crowd too much, but I think in the sport of volleyball, both my daughters played club and my son played some too, there is something about having people right on top of you, and you have a great advantage, I think, with having a student section like the Havocs. If you can talk about that a little bit, Tim.
Yeah, I think volleyball, absolutely, the crowd and atmosphere can make a difference. The fans can certainly swing the game 2 to 4 points in either direction. So, you know, having that home crowd of the Havocs and the GCU students and the local people of Phoenix come out to our matches and support us and cheer on our kids, it's a huge home court advantage. You know, last year was the first year that we transitioned full-time into the arena, and I got compliments from every coach in the conference about what a great environment was, how it was good for the sport, how we were going to change the dynamic of what the fan experience is like at a volleyball match, and that we are kind of leading the way in that. So, you know, it's certainly a great advantage. You know, our team knows how special our home environment is, and that's something we look forward to getting back and playing in again.
When you go through the WAC, it's a conference that needs to get more of a reach, I think, in terms of postseason. And you're building something with this facility and the program. Do you feel like the conference is getting stronger when it comes to women's volleyball?
I do. I think if you look at just all the non-conference records this year, it's been exceptional. You know, UTRGV beat a top 25 team last weekend. New Mexico State beat Arizona last weekend. You know, there's been multiple Power 5 teams that have gone down this year to non-conference against WAC teams. I think the WAC has done a good job. The coaches have done a good job of recruiting talent and understanding, you know, how to play their own brand of volleyball. I'm not trying to copy anyone else, but find a system that works best for their talent. I think when you look at the WAC, that's why there's such a diverse play of volleyball. You know, I think 7 out of the 9 teams really play distinctively different style.
That's good. That's good stuff. Before I let you go, and I had you on last year about this, but I think whenever you come on, I get questions about, how do they find players here in Arizona, Brad? What do I have to do with my kid who is in junior high or high school? And I try to do that with coaches that do go in the club sport a lot. As I mentioned earlier, I've been a club volleyball dad. I think you have to play some sort of club. You may disagree with me, but what's the process just to get on a radar for GCU?
Sure. I think the first step is certainly reaching out to our coaching staff and to Ariana Angus, our recruiting coordinator, giving her an email with your vitals, you know, graduation year, things like that. And then we certainly try and own our backyard. We try and recruit all the top talent out of the state of Arizona. So, you know, we have a great relationship with all the high school coaches, all the club coaches. We are at almost all, if not all, the local club tournaments and events. So, you know, if the student athlete is in that, you know, world, if she's playing high school volleyball and if she's playing club, there's a good chance we're going to see her and be able to give her a good evaluation.
Good stuff there, Tim. Appreciate the time. Thanks for being on Talk to the Lopes.
Thank you very much.
Tim Nolan, volleyball coach on the women's side at GCU. And that is Talk to the Lopes for this week.